When you think about Colton Underwood, you may be thinking about the football player. Maybe you're thinking about the celebrity on The Bachelor. Maybe you're thinking about this is a person who came out very openly on Netflix. And all of those things are true. But when I think about Colton Underwood, I think about his bravery. He went through so many obstacles in his life to come out. He went through so many obstacles in his life to pursue his parenthood journey. And he shares all of those things with us today. He is also the podcast host of Daddyhood. And he created this podcast to help other people have a better path to parenthood too. So tune in today to our podcast and then tune into Daddyhood because both are great. Welcome to Building Your Family. This is a podcast about surrogacy and donor conception and all the ways the modern family is built. And today I have the special privilege of having a like-minded person on this show, Colton Underwood, who is going to talk about his whole journey. He really is an amazing advocate. So welcome, Colton. So good to see you.
Good to see you too.
So let's start with your life prior to thinking about building a family, prior to The Bachelor. What was in your mind? You were starting to think, you mentioned in other interviews that you always wanted to be a dad, right?
Yeah, I think just for me, going through the process of trying, you know, different ways of essentially conversion therapy, of becoming straight and, you know, entering into these straight relationships were going to force me to make me straighter. And obviously I was wrong about that. But, you know, I was doing that because I grew up in the church. I grew up playing sports. I grew up wanting to be a dad and a family. And I didn't really see a way that I could do all of that, you know, if I was gay. So I was just trying my hardest to, you know, go with the flow and do what I needed to do to have everything that I wanted to have.
Did you feel that the people in your environment were not going to be accepting of you if you came out, your friends and family?
I just feel like it was a tough situation for me to be in. Where I grew up in Illinois and being part of the sports community and the Christian community, there wasn't a lot of signs that everything was going to be okay for sure. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely tough navigating that.
So how did you finally say, okay, enough is enough. I can't live with this mask on my face anymore. How am I going to break out of this and be myself, own my own truth?
I mean, it took hitting rock bottom. It took, you know, during the pandemic and, you know, a pretty dark and tragic time of my life to sort of rise back up and go through the coming out process. And unfortunately, I think that's common for a lot of men and people in our community, is you really sort of have to get rocked to you know, find that strength to fight for yourself and to stand up and say, no, this is who I am and this is why I deserve to be here and this is what I want to do now.
And were you on The Bachelor at that point?
Throughout my entire sort of struggling with my sexuality, it was during my football days, high school, college. You know, I knew I was different at a young age, but I just didn't know what that meant until I got to, you know, experience puberty and go through high school and really figure out like the attraction.
And when did you say, you know, I really want to be a dad. I really need to come out. How am I going to make these things work? When did you that finally coalesce inside of you?
During COVID and really hitting rock bottom, it's like I knew something had to change. And the only thing that I could change was the going through the coming out process and coming out and being authentic to myself and to the people in my life. And that obviously was the most healing and healthy thing for me to do. Now looking back, it was very hard and it was challenging and there was tough conversations to be had. And, you know, there's a fear, feelings of guilt just because I was like, I've lied to so many people, but it's like the most important person that I lied to was myself. So now looking back on it, you know, I really, you know, did a disservice not only to, you know, friends and family, but to myself as well.
And did you have any role models or anyone who helped you and say, you know, it's going to be okay, Colton, don't worry, and you can have a family and you can get married and you can have this wonderful life? Did you have any support?
Everybody in my family and my friends after I came out were very supportive. But like I said, like before I came out, there wasn't a ton. And I'm to blame for that too. I didn't really keep a lot of gay people in my life or as friends, just because it scared me that they would read between the lines and to see me for who I was. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of like support like that.
So you find that once you're true to yourself, the world can kind of open up for you.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it just is so transformative for me as a human being. And also just, it was like, I was starting, you know, starting from birth again. I sort of had like a new lease on life, and I approached things differently. I was more in touch with who I was, my feelings, what I wanted out of this world, and really just freed me up.
And then you met your husband.
Yes.
Yeah. And I, everyone out there needs to see those wedding pictures. They're so fantastic.
Thank you.
Really beautiful, beautiful. And what a nice story. Can you tell us a little bit about how you guys met? And
yeah, we met shortly after I, you know, had a wrap party for my Netflix show. I did a documentary on Netflix, recording and going through the process of coming out for Netflix and on that show called Coming Out Colton. During the wrap party, Jordan was there. And then 2 months later, we ran into each other again, and it was like magnets. We really hit it off right away. And, you know, when you know, you know. And I wasn't really looking for anything. He wasn't either. And it just happened. And that was the best and most beautiful thing for both of us.
Oh, how wonderful. That's beautiful. Yeah. So were you feeling like, I'm in love, it's wonderful, but I need to be a dad?
Well, we bonded over that in like one of our first conversations is, you know, he always wanted to be a father, and I did too. And I think that's so important. There's making sure you are on similar paths when you're entering into a relationship. And we bonded over that immediately.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. So it was like the perfect match. Meant to be. That's beautiful. So you guys started talking about it, and you thought, okay, well, we're going to get married and we're going to kind of move ahead. But as you were moving ahead, this like beautiful story finally happened. And then you kind of hit this bump in the road, right? Because here you are, you meet the person of your dreams, you get married, like everything's coming together for you. And I can't even tell you how amazing it is. I think that you did this Netflix special because, you know, coming out so publicly is amazing, but I'm sure on some level, it also feels so good to be able to be out in that way.
Yeah.
And then you get married and there's all these fantastic things happen. And then you kind of hit a bump in the road, right? With your fertility.
Actually, before even we got married, we started this process. And you know, I talk about it. It still feels so recent, but you know, we've been on our path to parenthood, is what we're calling it now, for about 2 years. For same-sex couples, there's a lot of steps and there's a lot of processes you have to go through, both with paperwork and, you know, finding the right egg donor and surrogates. And you have to make so many decisions. So we started the process before we actually got married. And, you know, one of the first things that the doctor, you know, my doctor did at our fertility clinic was test my sperm. And unfortunately, I didn't have any, and my husband did. And it was scary because, you know, I didn't know what that meant. I was like, oh, does that mean I'm sterile? I can never have kids. And, you know, there was further testing we had to do. And essentially, I had to enter into what was 6 months of sperm rehabilitation and making some lifestyle choice changes and just really figuring out how to make my sperm be able to swim again.
I heard you talking a little bit about that. Do you mind sharing? Because I think a lot of people can learn from what you shared about how you learned that your lifestyle was impacting your fertility and some things that people can know about, because people don't know.
I did mention on my podcast everything that I was doing to damage my sperm that not a lot of people understand, and that is working out excessively, steam rooms, hot tubs, saunas, hot baths, riding your Peloton, even wearing tight compression shorts, testosterone, TRT, which I was taking. You know, I had even a medical professional commented under being like, there's no reason you should be on this. And I'm like, that's a doctor saying that to me. I was like, you're not my doctor. You didn't know what I went through. And I unfortunately had some supplements that I was taking in college that damaged the way that my body makes testosterone. So I had a lower level of testosterone. And the way that my doctor went about it was putting me on synthetic testosterone to help just with my energy levels. And I had a lot of stress going on in my life, so I needed to make sure that my hormones were in balance. And that's why I was on TRT. And, you know, I do know now that, you know, testosterone replacement for men is essentially a sterilizer to sperm. It really reduces the rate. It signifies to your body that you do not need to make new sperm. So it sort of shuts that part off. It's not as effective as like what a typical birth control would be for women, but it is essentially like for men. It can be like a weird form of birth control.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that, because I've had several patients discover it the way that you did, and people just don't talk about it openly. And it's so important to talk about so that men know ahead of time and they don't have to go through this.
Yeah, a lot of men, and myself included, you know, it is sort of a hit to the ego. You know, you don't really want to talk about it. You don't want to admit it, because it's like, this is, you know, there is also a weird, for heterosexual couples, men often carry a lot of guilt around the birthing process, because like, there's not a lot that they contribute to it other than that. So when like, sort of their sole purpose and function of reproductive health isn't essentially healthy, there's a weird sense of guilt of being like, you have to go through all of this to carry the baby, to give birth to the baby, to feel all of these feelings. And all I have to do is, you know, provide sperm, and I can't even do that. It really sort of hits the men differently. And I think that's why a lot of people carry shame around it, and they don't like to talk about it, is because they feel like that is like a simple basic function that they can't have. I remember that was me too. I was like, how is like, I can't do the most basic function of my reproductive health.
And so how did you handle that, Colton? How did you deal with that? Did you talk about it in therapy, or?
Yeah, I definitely did. Mm-hmm. My husband was the absolute best. I mean, he had great sperm numbers, so he didn't really have to do much, but he made all the lifestyle changes with me. They weren't super easy. I know it sounds like champagne problems, but I love my hot tub and coffee in morning time. So I had to stop doing that. You know, he was really supportive. And I think having a partner that is supportive and understanding of what you're going through is the number one most important thing.
That's very sweet. That's really nice.
Yeah.
And so then they came back and I guess tested you every 3 months or so to see how things were going.
Yeah. The 3 month marker, I was trending in the right direction, and they were excited and happy with where my numbers were. They wanted to get them a little bit better before we froze. And we did. You know, I had a game plan put together with my doctor, and we followed it, and it ended up working out.
And so that must have been such a huge relief for you.
It was. I remember vividly, you know, it just like, it was something that I was like, okay, good. It was nothing more serious than just like the five main lifestyle things I was doing to affect my sperm health.
Well, that's great. And so I'm assuming that both of you said from day one, you both wanted to be able to use your sperm to have children so that you could each have a genetically related child.
It was sort of a goal of both of ours is, you know, you have to be this process. You really have to sort of be decisive, and you mm-hmm. have to, you know, it's one of the most intentional things you can do. So for us, we really were intentional in like, you know, we both wanted to have our own biological children to be still our children and our family. But that was important to us, and that's a decision that we made.
My name is Lisa Schumann. I'm a therapist, a researcher, an author, and I am passionate about helping people find a better journey to parenthood. I created the Center for Family Building to help people understand how to make decisions, not just for the short term, but for a lifetime. We have group counseling, individual counseling, couples counseling, and lots of other services that can help people find the answers that they're looking for. Just take a look at our website so you can see a few of the thousands of people we helped build a better path to parenthood. The decisions you make are too important to leave up to chance. Arm yourself with the right information. Take a look at our website and sign up for a session with one of our therapists, join one of our groups, or access one of our programs, and you will quickly see why our strategies are so effective. Now back to our episode. As you made that decision, then you had the next step was you had to go to a fertility clinic. Yeah. Was it hard to find a clinic where you felt was going to be queer friendly and going to be a place where you felt comfortable?
We didn't, because we live in California and we're very lucky and fortunate to be here. But I couldn't imagine doing what I've done at that facility, as you know, as far as collecting your sample and, you know, a closet essentially across from people giving blood and all these workers. Unfortunately, a lot of states in our country still aren't the most LGBTQ+ friendly. So I always keep that perspective when I'm there. But, you know, that's why, you know, we mentioned before, you know, we started recording, you know, my friend Khalid, who found Give Legacy and Legacy Sperm, like those types of companies and innovative companies in the fertility space are so needed, just for parts of our country that do not have access to fertility centers and also just aren't LGBTQ+ friendly. We really need people like him to be creating these companies that make people feel safe.
100%. Absolutely. And it could be a little bit scary, right? I mean, it's scary anyway, but now with, you know, the political climate being what it is, it's even more scary for a lot of people.
Totally. Yeah.
What you do is so important, and being able to get on your podcast and talk about these things is so essential because you can reach those people. So it's really wonderful. Really wonderful. So you found your fertility clinic, and then you both said, okay, the next step, we have to find an egg donor so we can make embryos. How was that process for you?
I mean, it was interesting, to say the least. We ended up working with donor concierge who sort of tapped into all of these different types of egg donors, but also surrogate donors. So we were sort of running parallel because, I don't know, a lot of people don't know this, but surrogates are actually right now on about a 6-month wait list. So by the time you pick your egg donor and go through all of the process of harvesting the eggs, you're then about synced up with your waitlist time with your surrogate. So you sort of do them now at the same time, just understanding that the surrogate, it takes a while to get matched with one. But it was such a wild experience because you're truly flipping through what feels like catalogs of women and pictures, and you're making decisions of, is eye color, is hair color, is height, is education, what's important and what's not, what can you live without, what can you live with? And the thing I always just kept saying is, I'm not here to play God. I'm going to love my child regardless of who the biological material is and go from there.
And so how did you make that decision then? Were you looking for something specific or?
I mean, we really didn't. You know, the one thing that both was like our overlying attribute that we looked for was somebody who was adventurous. How can you feel like on paper, how can you tell someone's adventurous? Like by breaking down what they've done in their lives at such a young age too, because most of these donors are in their early 20s. Just because that is healthy egg life. So that was like sort of our one major overlapper, is we wanted them to be adventurous. And I think we found the perfect one.
Wow, that's amazing. So is your husband also adventurous? Is that his personality?
Yeah, we both are. Oh. We're both from really, you know, really small towns that, you know, we ended up leaving and getting out of, but also just like have such an appreciation and love for, you know, who we were and how those towns built us, that we sort of want the same, you know, for our children, is we want them to have like this unique perspective on life that they are ingrained with. And I think we both believe in nurture versus nature. You know, we both think, you know, the more that we can love on our child and raise them, you know, the right way, the better off they're going to be. It's not only just, you know, biological and all of the genetics per se.
Absolutely. And so you were looking for somebody adventurous. And so were you thinking, I want somebody who's like a skydiver or someone who just...
All of those little bonuses that they could throw on that sheet always, you know, came into place, like studying abroad, traveling, like what volunteer programs were you a part of? These women are in their early 20s. So we're not like looking at career stats or anything like that. We're looking at, you know, schooling and, you know, how often did you move as a child? Where did you, so all of those different things sort of came into play.
And you both had to do carrier testing, make sure you weren't carriers for any difficulties, and make sure that your donor didn't match up with any problems. And I'm sure they screened them for all the health concerns as well.
Yeah. Genetic testing was definitely a process for us as well, for both of us to go through.
And then what about your level of openness with your donor? Did you say, I'd like to get to know you, I'd like to be able to reach out to you when our child's older, I want to check in for medical information? Did you have any of those concerns?
We actually chose to remain, I don't want to use anonymous because it's not the right word for it, but we just remained as intended parent one and intended parent two. We did not reveal our names or who we were, where we were, or our photos. But we did have a chance to get to know her. And then at the end of the day, we did ask, you know, if our child ever wants to meet her, if she'd be open to it. And she said yes. So that was, you know, important, just because kids are curious and we want to make sure that like we're not holding them back from asking questions and being curious and being open.
And she said, yes, she's comfortable doing that, being in touch with your kids. What about for medical information? Is she willing to be in touch with you?
So those were the two main reasons why we wanted it that way, is just one for our kids and then two for any future medical issues that might come up. We just need to have access to potential medical, additional medical records and history.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you saw pictures, I'm assuming, and all of that.
Yeah.
So it's nice because you have the picture of who she is in your mind, right? You can totally. Kind of, that's lovely to be able to see that. Back in the day when I first started in this industry, there were no such thing. You had no pictures. You just had a little description.
I know. We've come such a long way, and I'm really proud of the community as a whole. We still have a long ways to go, but it's been really cool, and I'm honored and privileged to even be able to do this in 2024.
It sounds like you're taking all the right steps and doing everything really well. How did you guys do with your process? Did the first cycle work out okay?
Yeah, so they did the first egg retrieval, and there was 22 eggs. They split them 11-11 between me and my husband, Jordan. And then from there, we have three embryos. So we're excited Great. About that. So it's just, I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, the process that you have to go through for there too. It's like, that's common. Unfortunately, you know, maybe we're a little below average, but that's around the average of embryos that take out after, you know, 22 eggs are harvested.
So are you thinking, you know, ideally you'll have one child with each of your genetics? Would you consider if, let's say, God forbid, it didn't work out and you're in a situation where maybe one of you doesn't have extra embryos, would you try again? Would your donor be available?
Yeah, these are all conversations that we had to have, you know, is making sure that like our donor was available just in case, God forsaken, anything happened. But, you know, we're working with our doctor just to say, hey, like we've sort of communicated with him our intentions of building our family and how we want to go about it. So he knows our game plan and he's on the same page as us. But, you know, when we communicate with him, it's more so, hey, just put the healthiest embryo in and just like work with us on our plan. Like we don't really need to know. We're not going to like step on your toes, like put whichever embryo you feel like has the best shot of taking in when it comes to that time. But just know, like, here's our game plan, one of each. So there, you know, that way also it's not like, oh, it's your turn or it's my turn. It's like, it's our turn. It's our family. We very nice. Much speak in like the R's and we's instead of like you and me.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, it is very common. I don't know if I published some research on a lot of the gay dads that I'd seen over the last decade. And most men want to have a child with each of their genetics. But in the end, a healthy child is ultimately the most important thing. But it still can be very difficult when you don't have that option, right? When you don't have an embryo with your own genetics, because it is something that very many men want. You know, they think about that most of their life. And unlike women, women have two options. They can also carry. So if they don't have the genetic connection, they can carry instead. And men just don't have that.
It's definitely, you know, we had to figure out ways for us to feel all a part of the process, right? You know, a lot of women tend to feel like they have better and bigger connections with the baby. So, you know, something that we're working through right now is like, how do we feel connected in this process, even though it is technically a medical procedure and we're not there caring, but how do, you know, what's our game plan with, you know, our surrogate once we have everything lined up? So yeah, it's interesting for sure.
And what about your surrogate? Did you get matched yet? Are you in the process?
We're matched with our surrogate and we're just, you know, still going through medical clearance and testing, which is so important. And, you know, for us, you know, we're lucky that she's, you know, in California, so we don't have to leave the state to actually go see our surrogate. Still a long process that I don't think a lot of people, you know, realize what all goes into it. Like these doctors and these women are incredible, and the testing and the effort and just the level of love and trust that, you know, we have to pour into each other is so great.
So I'm assuming from the sound of it, you really like your surrogate.
Yeah, we're very happy with everything right now and how it's going. It's just like, it's a process and we're trying to keep this less clinical and more human. And that was sort of the goal with me creating Daddyhood, is like, how do I humanize such a clinical and statistical world? Fertility is always done sort of by stats and genetic testing and all of these like very black and white clinical expressions. How do I humanize this? How do I teach you like these incredible women are carrying babies and life and bringing life to human beings who physically can't, not only just in the same sex, you know, in the LGBTQ plus community, but for our heterosexual couples out there who cannot have children. How do I humanize this? How do I tell stories? How do I talk to people who are a part of this for people?
It's incredible. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And this is going to lead to my next question. So as you go through the surrogacy journey, have you guys thought about, well, how much are we really going to share on the podcast? How much are we going to share with friends and family? How much are we going to keep private through this surrogacy journey? Because now you're also kind of moving into this world of having a surrogate. There's another person involved and her family and all sorts of other people. So have you been thinking about that?
Well, we're definitely protecting our surrogate. There will be no names. She will not be joining me on the podcast. We sort of already put like some boundaries and borders in place just because, you know, she didn't sign up for any of this. I'm a public figure and I also love sharing, but I also have to protect my family at the end of the day and the emotions that go through this process. I think what's beautiful about a podcast is we can put it, you know, we can record an episode and then figure out, you know, one, when we want to release it, and then two, what edits we want to make and what are we comfortable putting out there in the world. For me, I love trying to serve as a voice and be an example and try to share as much as possible to help people out there. But I definitely think at times it is smart to be able to protect your family, protect your emotions, protect your well-being when you have to.
So you're kind of in the process of seeing how that unfolds as you move forward. But now she's not going to be on the podcast and she's not going to be sharing her pictures on Facebook of your baby and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a level of privacy that we're really maintaining throughout all of this.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough balance.
It really is. It's challenging. And it's been interesting for me because I haven't really had boundaries in my life and my reality career. So now it's like I'm taking this time to really figure out to me what feels good and what doesn't.
And as you do that, do you find that both of you are on the same page about things?
Very much so. Yeah. The two of us are in sync. And that's what one of the best things in our relationship is the way that we can communicate with each other.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's so important. I mean, that's really everything, right? So that's great.
Totally.
And it's going to be important going forward. And I guess that's what the next question I have for you is, you know, people get very conflicted about this idea about privacy versus secrecy. Everyone is entitled to privacy, but, you know, secrecy has shame involved in it. So nobody wants to feel that shame is the driver behind their privacy. They want to be private because everyone's entitled to that. And, you know, as a public figure, you're talking about your story over and over again. And it's natural to maybe get tired of talking about it sometimes, or maybe you're not going to want to talk about it to the PTA president or, you know, your kid's music class or whatever. How have you guys decided together, because, you know, you want to make sure that you guys don't argue about this, that how have you decided together where you kind of draw that line as you're moving forward?
I mean, obviously we have some time until our kid is in school and then we have to have that type of conversation or dialogue. But as of right now, I mean, we're not really hiding anything, you know, hence daddyhood being here. But I do think, you know, even having conversations right now of like, are we going to be taking pictures of our baby and posting it on social media? Are we sort of going to be protecting, you know, their identity? So it's all conversations that we're having right now. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong, you know, and I think there's so much shame built into the parenting community already that I don't want to, you know, add into that shame. I want to be part of the conversation and hopefully part of the solution. I don't want to be part of the problem.
That's a tough thing because you're out there in the world sharing this great information, which is so helpful to so many people. On the other hand, you also have to think about your own family, right? And where do I feel comfortable with my own family? And that can be a tough line, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like, once again, boundaries are so important. Communication is so important. And also just understanding that it could change, right? We can change our minds. We can change our opinions. We can change how we handle certain things. So I think always being open-minded is the most important.
And how has your, talking about change, how has your perspective about that changed since the beginning? How have you kind of changed your ideas about that?
I mean, so much. Daddyhood's been one of the best things that I've experienced and gone through and built. I mean, I had so much shame when I first started this, just in regards of my reproductive health and my sperm count. And now hearing and meeting so many incredible people and what they've been through and what they've experienced has really changed the perspective in the way that I view fertility as a whole and IVF as a whole. And I'm just honored to be like a part of the community and feel like I'm, you know, giving back in a super small way that I am.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And are you starting to think a little bit differently as time goes on because you have at the same time this drive for making, you know, obviously the podcast and helping people out there in the world, and at the same time starting to think about how am I going to think about my own family and my own kids and not feeling like I have to kind of push beyond a place where I'm comfortable?
Yeah, I think, you know, self-reflection and just sort of goal setting and once again, being on the same page with your partner is so important, with the understanding that we're both growing and we're both learning how to enter this new phase of life, reading all the books in the world that you can, but also understanding like it's your experience. What you're going through is so unique to yourself, and just making sure you have the right support system, I think, around you is important just to help make all the decisions that you need to make.
I think that's really important. And you're a support for so many, Colton.
Oh, thank you so much.
Really, yeah, it's really wonderful that you're out there and talking about these things. Tell me, what do you think has been the most challenging if you were to kind of talk to your younger self, and of course also people out there about like, you know, if I had to look back and think that was really tough, or I really should have thought about this, what would you say?
I think this, the most challenging thing that's happened in my life so far is obviously coming out and just like confronting all of the societal pressures and fears that I had built up in my head around religion, around family, around our sports culture. And, you know, I'm still sort of shedding layers. I'm still sort of, you know, figuring out what parts of me are me and what parts of me are sort of ingrained in me through different identities that I carried. That's definitely challenging.
And what about with respect to the fertility journey? Which parts do you think have been most challenging?
I would just say right now, the daddyhood part. Like what should I share? What shouldn't I share? And finding balance right now. I think that's the most important. You know, I'm bringing people into a very emotional and sacred part of a lot of people's lives and family building. So it's like, how do I do this in an authentic way, but yet try to have some boundaries, but also try to be vulnerable and open and transparent? It's been challenging. Mm.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's not secrecy, but it's also like privacy, right? So I'm like, yes, I want to bring people in, but I also don't want to like create more of a stigma or shame around it. I have to process. Like before I could verbally say, you know, I didn't have any sperm and this is how I felt, I had to process that myself. So it's sort of taking a step back, processing it, and then being able to articulate what's going on.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I'm assuming you probably are going to feel that way going forward because your world is going to grow, right? You're going to meet people in, you know, the soccer practice and the school play and all these people who are going to want to understand your journey. And as you probably know, I mean, you have the public figure you, but you also personally are probably in a situation where people are curious, right? And people ask things like, for example, people very often will say, who's the real dad? And you say, right, well, we're both the real dads. So right, that's the end of the story. And then people say, no, well, tell me. And of course, that's a big decision too. You know, are you going to say, this is my child's information to share? Or do you want to share it yourself? There's so many questions like that.
Yeah, we've had that conversation and we've already sort of been faced with, you know, just throughout this process of people not really knowing. We've already heard all the way up to, well, who's going to be the mom and who's going to be the dad? It's like, oh, there's two dads. God. So, you know, I just think that right now with the way that our culture is, that was another reason like why daddyhood is important, is so that people can understand the language and how to discuss this and how like certain questions are inappropriate.
Yes.
You know, I've certainly changed the way that I just barge into people's relationships and say, when are you guys having kids? Because that's a loaded question for a lot of people. It's like, how does somebody sit there and say, I can't have kids, but we want kids? Like, that's a challenging conversation in a challenging way. So, you know, a lot of people just brush it off. And I think, mm-hmm, you know, I've realized that now as I've gone through this. And I also, hopefully people realize that too, that there are certain questions that are inappropriate to ask and you really have no business knowing the answers of.
Yeah. But it will happen.
It will happen. So, and you have to be on the same page. And for, yes, Jordan and I, we stick to it's both of our DNA. It's both of our kids. This is our family. This is not, it's not a he or a they or that. It's, this is us. This is our family unit.
So you're getting ready for it.
We're getting ready. I don't know if, you know, yeah, we'll ever be 100% ready, but, you know, I know trial by fire. throw us into it, and we're going to try our best, and we're going to love as hard as we can.
Well, it's so important. I think your perspective, you guys feel like you can be a unit and go through these things together and talk about it together before you have to deal with it in the outside world. I think that's so great because so many people don't, and then you get caught off guard, and then sometimes you say things you don't feel comfortable saying, and it just feels really icky, and then you're kind of stuck feeling like you go home and say, well, I said something I didn't want to, and then your partner's saying, why'd you say that? And it just becomes this whole mess. So it's great that you guys are thoughtful.
If I had any advice in my short time going through this, it would just be make sure you're on the same page as your partner. I think it's so important to be on the same page. It's so important to communicate with each other what feels good, what doesn't feel good. And we've definitely, had to adjust too. It's like, people ask how many embryos are yours? How many embryos are his? And what are the sex? And what is it? And there are parts of us, like at first we were like, oh, we have to give this information out. And then we realized like, oh, this is for us to decide who gets this information,
Yes.
And that really changed a lot of perspective for us.
100%.
Yeah.
And I would imagine for you, that has to be such a clear distinction because you're so used to being out there in the world with people asking you questions and on your own podcast. And then you have to say, okay, these are the places where I'm going to reel it in and kind of set that boundary.
Totally. Yeah. So it's all about boundaries, all about communication and sort of just, evaluating as you're going through it.
Well, that's great. It's so exciting, Colton.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see the baby pictures.
I know. I can't wait.
Well, we're going to wind down now. I know, our time is up, but is there anything that you'd like to share with the audience as we wrap up that you think will be particularly helpful, or there's a place where people could reach out to you?
For anybody that's getting ready to enter into this phase of their life, listen to a few of the episodes on daddyhood. I feel like no matter if you're a same-sex couple or, a heterosexual couple, you're going to take a lot from it. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to be introduced to new people, new stories that are going to make you feel less alone. And I think, community is so important. Fertility can often feel very isolating. So leaning into your support system, leaning into your community, finding whether it's online or in person is important to have.
100%. I echo that 100%. Colton, it's so great to have you on this podcast. Thank you so much for your time. And everyone out there, please sign up or subscribe and rate and review Daddyhood because it's a fantastic podcast.
We drop every Wednesday. We're on episode, I think 5 is coming out this Wednesday. So we're so excited for that one. It's with WeNatal. And the women over there who have created prenatal supplements for both men and women. And they come in a his and his kit, a hers and hers kit, and a him and hers kit. So they're very inclusive and just really support the overall health for your reproductive health for both men and women.
Terrific. Okay. So everyone subscribe for sure. And you can certainly also reach out to me at familybuilding.net or here. And we will see you next week. Thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi, it's Lisa Schumann, just popping in quickly to say thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked it, please rate, review, and subscribe because that's how we keep going and come back for more.